Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today once again by the great Vin Forte.
Oh my gosh.
You know him from the podcast Oddball, where he talks about various pizza shapes and sports.
And food. And
yes. Have you tried the Batman pizza?
I have not. I have no desire to. Have you tried it?
I have not yet, but I will.
Okay.
And I will, we're in Staten Island. We have to go to Jersey to get it. There's
no more Little Caesars?
There's no Caesars here on the island.
I thought there was at least like two Little Caesars.
The one you're thinking of is becoming a Starbucks right now.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you got to know something about me, Vin, if you don't know this yet. I have a nerddom and a fandom for junk food as much as I do for film and TV and shit. Just did a whole episode on McDonald's.
Oh, did you try the hack menu?
No, I haven't yet.
You haven't done the Land Air Sea Burger, which unfortunately they're not calling by the real name, the McGangbang.
No, well, I'm a vegetarian, so
So your options are limited for the hack
menu. Right. But my thing is I love Taco Bell. And the Taco Bell app, you can do all these crazy things.
Oh, yes.
And it's not annoying, like, when you're there and you go, can you do that and do that? You just put what you want on the app and then go to the drive-thru, pick it up without paying
for it. No, I love Taco Bell. And let me tell you something. I'm sure you brought this up in the episode itself, but I totally echo this sentiment if you did. We lost all our Taco Bells like 15 years ago now.
And now they're back, baby.
But not only are they back, right now, from where we're sitting in your house, there's like six of them in a 3-mile radius.
Yes. They made a comeback like you would not believe. And the menu.
Oh, the menu.
Is incredible.
Crunch wraps for days.
I have two favorites.
Okay.
And swap both beans for me. The cheesy gordita crunch. Love it. Mm-hmm. It's got that thick outside. And then,
What I like their vegetarians. I've had their meals before where it's just like the bean burrito.
Yeah, it's delicious.
It is.
And anything there you could swap. It's so easy on the app. And then when you order it, it goes dong. And then the other one is the one, what's it called? Wait, hold on.
They have like a million items and half of them are the same
thing. Oh, it's all how do we take cornmeal, cheese, beans, and potatoes and just put them in 900 different configurations.
Also, if you want to go nuts on Taco Bell, like, boy, do they have deals.
Oh, well, like, I order it so much that I'm always earning free shit. Like, I ordered a free taco today. It's like
they have a Taco Pass now.
They've video gamified it where, there's, like, a challenges.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how much can you eat?
Well, did you see they have a Taco Pass that they're rolling out now?
No, what is that?
They have a Taco Pass where, I don't know if it's out yet, but it's rolling out now, where basically you pay, I think it's like $10 a month.
Yes.
And every day you are entitled to one free taco.
That might be worth it.
Oh, I think that would absolutely be worth it.
Wow. My two favorites are the Doritos Cheesy Gordita Crunch.
Okay.
It's got the Dorito shell on the inside and the outside. It's basically two shells.
Yeah.
And then the Chalupa. Which is the
chalupa. I like the chalupa.
Yeah, so good. And I add rice and beans to all my...
Same thing, because for whatever reason, they don't like do rice and beans by default on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But you got to have the rice in there, Phil.
Yeah. Fantastic. Anyway...
This was not sponsored by Taco Bell.
No, it's just something I love.
Yeah.
This is Pop Culture Man Children, and this is us doing a full episode for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, I kind of want to just keep going with the fast food stuff because I've been obsessed with... Because that's part of my podcast is I do a fast food segment.
Do you really?
Yeah, or like a weird food segment. Like this past week, like you mentioned, we touched on the Little Caesars Batman pizza.
Bat calzone or whatever.
Let me tell you something. It's not a calzone. It's specifically called a calzone with a Y at the end.
Dark.
Dark, gritty calzone.
Yeah.
But the week before, I did a whole segment on the Dorito, the new, this is a mouthful, Flamin' Hot Cool Ranch Doritos Locos Tacos.
Okay. I have not tried that yet.
I was not a fan, but I'm also not necessarily a fan of the Doritos Locos Tacos because I always find them to be way more muted than they should be.
Right. Yeah, it's not what you think it's going to be.
It's not what you think it's going to be. It's literally the same taco shell you're
expecting. Now it's orange.
But now it's orange, and like it vaguely has a little Dorito to it.
Yeah, and I'm not a huge fan of the super hot stuff.
No.
Like the Flamin' Hot Cheetos, like that's
not
really
a fan.
Yeah. Sometimes you see on TikTok like somebody make like a beautiful like meal and then like they go and now and then they put like crumbled Flaming Hot Cheetos on top. It's like you just ruined what was actually a good meal.
Well, that's like there's a trend on TikTok where people are adding, I mean, it's like what's it called, like chamoy and tajin,
yeah,
to everything, where it's like they basically turn everything into Mexican candy, where it's like, okay, we've got this TikTok trend where we're doing frozen fruit roll-ups, but now we got to put some goop on it that turns it into basically like a gummy on the outside.
Oh, that's horrible.
And then we're going to pour some tajin spice on it.
That sounds terrible.
So we're going to make it spicy, like it's a Mexican candy.
That's terrible.
Because my whole thing is always, like, if I'm going to have something hot, it's got to have flavor to it.
Yes, exactly.
Like, if you ever find yourself in Staten Island, the best buffalo wings, I was having this conversation with someone the other day, Good Danino's, okay, which is a place known for their pizza.
Yes, it is.
But the buffalo wings have the best, for my money, heat to flavor ratio.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
I'm not a fan of like when you go to a wing place and it's just like all heat. These are a suicide wings.
Well, yeah. When it's a dare, it's like, this is not food. I can't enjoy this. This is a bit.
Right. I want to enjoy this.
Yeah. All right, Vin, let's go to some news.
Yeah. So what's going on in Ukraine now?
No. Entertainment news.
Oh, okay.
Vin, I'm sure you read about this. This news hit me. It shocked me.
Okay.
They're making another Kelvin Star Trek. Star Trek 4.
Yeah, I'm excited. They've been lingering on this for a couple of years now.
It seemed like it was dead in the water, didn't it? Like people even like
it did.
Every now and then Simon Pegg would be like, I want to do it, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like it. And
I'm excited because I like these movies.
Me too. And it's been over 10 years now, right? 2009 was the first one. Yeah, I like this crew. I actually like that they're sticking with this crew instead of rebooting it again. I like that it's like this crew is its own certain continuity. We're going to keep going with them.
Yeah, I think, first off, I think Star Trek fans that like gatekeep too much and are like, oh, this isn't my Star Trek. It's like, it's like, fine. But you can't tell me that they didn't take as much care as they possibly could have.
It's literally in a different universe.
Not only is it in a different universe, they took the time to bring in Leonard Nimoy in that first movie.
Right.
And not only did they take the time to do that, that first movie has consequences.
Yes.
For Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard.
Yeah.
The destruction of Romulus in that movie is a huge, it's basically the driving force behind Star Trek Picard.
Yeah, wow.
So, like, these movies do actually matter.
Right. Yeah, I actually haven't watched... I'm a weirdo who's like, I'm a Star Trek film fan, but I haven't watched a lot of the shows.
Yeah.
It's a fandom that I've always... I've never been against. I just have never... You know what it is? It seems daunting. It seems like there's so much.
There is, but it's just so... Like, Deep Space Nine, especially, is so good.
Yeah, you've told me that before.
And honestly, a big hurdle to a lot of people who may be new,
yeah,
is the realization that Star Trek The Next Generation, which is the one everyone wants to jump into,
yeah,
does not get great until, like, consistently great until the start of season 3.
Yeah, you know, I watched it for a little while, and I found it, like, hit or miss. And I was like, what am I missing here?
The first season is basically... And Red Letter Media did a whole thing on this, and they were absolutely right when they summed it up that first season is Gene Roddenberry reusing scripts from the 60s that were written by men who were born in the 30s.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to, like, just pump the shit out
Before
you can, like, before it gets to that point where it's like, okay, we've got completely fresh blood in here.
Yeah, okay.
Gene Roddenberry, unfortunately, he died, but right. He gave up more and more control.
Right.
Like, season one is an interesting watch just as, like, an artifact of that time.
Yeah.
Season two has some high highs and low lows. Like, you'd see them working it out.
Okay, okay.
And then by the time you get to season three, it's like, okay, we're off and running. Okay. Like, season two has that... Honestly, I could just put a playlist together of, like, here's, like, two episodes from season one that you need to watch.
Yeah.
And then, like, here are the episodes from season two you need to watch, and then start at season three.
Okay.
Because season two, I don't want to say skip it, because you would be missing out on some really good episodes.
Yeah.
Like, season two especially has that episode that's, like, all-time Star Trek, The Measure of a Man, where...
No, yeah, yeah.
Where they basically make the argument that Data is a sentient being. And he's, like, on
trial. Yeah, 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 yeah. I think I've seen this or seen something about it. What is your feeling on... How would you rank the three films in the series that are out so far?
I would say... I would say... that's tough. I would definitely say Into Darkness is number three.
Oh, you think so? Wow. I was going to say Into Darkness is one for me.
Really?
I think Into Darkness and the first one are very close.
Okay.
And the third one is okay, but it's the one I like the least, Beyond.
Okay, see, I think Beyond was actually a surprise. I thought it was really good.
Okay, okay. I didn't dislike it, but it was like, okay, I wasn't big on it.
Well, the thing I like about this series, these three movies so far, which is why I want them to do more, is that each one has given you, like, a slightly different flavor of Star Trek.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Where it's like the first one was very much like high action, very like reminiscent of the original series. The next one was like Starfleet intrigue, like what's going on, like political machinations. And then the thing I didn't really like about two was they didn't have to have Khan in there. They could have had a different person. But like beyond that, it's not a bad movie. And then three was a really good, like, away mission story.
Yeah, and it was more humorous, three.
It was more
or
humorous.
Attempted to be more humorous.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I they should do five more. Let's just do it.
Do it.
I love it. I love it. I was so happy to hear this. I really was.
Oh, I was too, because it seemed for a while, like you said, it was dead.
Yeah. Like, I had given up hope on it. I was like,
hey, we've got these new TV shows, and we're going to chug along with those, but we're not gonna do the movies anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so moving on. There's a new Blue's Clues movie coming out.
Okay, this I was not expecting.
Yeah, apparently there was one in, like, 2000 or something that I totally missed. I was probably too busy.
Is this going to be like Spider-Man and all the Steves are going to unite?
Whether you're making a joke or not, that is exactly what it is.
Oh, wow.
And I even read like headlines that literally said like the point you just made. Like, yes, it's all three Steves or they're not all Steve.
Yeah.
But it's all three hosts. It's called like Blue's Clues in the City. And, like, they're in a city, they're solving a crime.
Okay.
All three of them together now. It's Into the Spider-Verse with Blue's Clues.
Okay. I'm
sure.
Yeah,
I have
why
no
not?
Feelings, but I was just like, I gotta talk about this on the show at some point.
It's so weird. Like, I think back to that time when Blue's Clues was popular and all the weird rumors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
About, Steve died of a heroin overdose.
Yeah.
What?
Like, no, yeah.
No, you just left the show. Like,
it makes me feel old because I've aged enough that now what I'm seeing in popular culture is the reboots of things that were I wasn't there for. So I don't...
Right.
Like, I'll never forget, like, when Dora the Explorer movie came out. Like, I was just like, well, this is weird and stupid. But then a young person that I know, like, in his 20s or whatever, was like, I'm going to be there opening night. Like, this is my childhood. He was feeling about it like the way that I felt about, like, Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Well, that fucks me up because, like, I realized something the other day that, because I heard someone, there's, like, some account on Twitter talking about how, oh, yeah, I remember when I was a child, you know, doing BuzzFeed quizzes and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was like, what year is it? It's like, well, it's 2022, so
Yeah.
2012. And I was even thinking back to 2009.
Yeah.
Then I was really thinking like, no, that's 2012 is 10 years ago.
Right, right. But you know what? From the age of 10 to 20, right? You were a kid. And you know, childhood is such a formative time, and adulthood just flies fucking by. Like 10 years ago to me, like I'm obviously a different person than I was 10 years ago. I obviously a much better person, but also like I was still a grown up. Like I wasn't forming. Yeah. Whereas like, you know, like someone who's, there are grown ups now that were like, I was born after 9/11. Like I was like when I was a little kid, I watched, you know, whatever show that I never even fucking think about. Like, you know.
Yeah, like, oh, you, when I was a kid, I was watching Phineas and Ferb.
Yeah, they say shit like, oh, I grew up on this. And I'm like, you grew up on that? What are you talking about? How could that be?
Like, don't you kids remember Doug? Like, bro, who the fuck is Doug?
What's Doug?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is great. I mean, time keeps on moving. That's just all it is.
Yeah.
Somebody's excited about this, genuinely. Somebody out there is like, absolutely. Holy shit. All three
of them together at last on the big screen.
I kind of like the way the original one looks now, because now he wears a trench coat and a fedora, which is brown, but then he's got the tie, and the tie is the blue and green stripes.
Oh, okay.
So he's
like the head detective now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's the old gun. He's the, you know,
he's the commissioner from Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah. It'd be funny if it were like a real mystery, like a double like homicide.
Someone's abducted Blue. Like we gotta.
Like it begins like Lethal Weapon 1, where like a high chick jumps off a balcony and dies, and then like cut to like fucking Steve there. Like she was only 19 years old, jacked up on heroin. What's that, Blue?
Blue, get out of here! I'm taking my pills.
You're fucking up the crime scene.
I'm just a dog.
I picked the wrong day to stop smoking.
Just turns into Puccinski. Now I'm just imagining, like, I'm just going to call them the Steves. Two of the Steves.
yeah, sure.
Do the scene from the Ever Guys where they jump off the building.
And they die.
What a great scene.
Yeah, that's the best. And that's just the opening of that movie.
That's the opening of that movie, and I still can't believe, I know someone who was somehow fooled into thinking that like this was like Scream, where it was billed as The Rock and Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
And he was shocked, like genuinely flabbergasted when after that scene it
turned into a comedy. That's a great experience for that person.
It's a great experience for that person, but like how? Yeah, like I don't get that.
Some people like maybe just blindly walk into movies. I think.
Oh, they absolutely do, because I remember one of my favorite movie going experiences ever was, this is not a great movie, but when I saw Watchmen in the theater, there was two old ladies sitting in front of me.
Oh boy.
And also separately from them, an entire family with like 6 to 10 kids. That all couldn't, like, the oldest had to have been at least, like, 12.
Oh,
the
boy.
Oldest. And throughout the first part of this movie, the old ladies in front of me, I can hear them. They're just saying things like, I think this is, like, that Superman movie that came out.
Superman Returns.
Yeah. Like, oh, this is a, I heard this was a superhero movie. So, oh, this should be good. This should be good.
Wow.
And then the family, the family all got up and walked out in the middle of the owl sex scene.
Sure. Well, they made it that far.
They made it that far, and the old ladies were like, "This is garbage. This is perverse." They're like, "This is just perverted now. Well, I don't know what's going on."
There are some people, an older generation, that are like, "Let's just show up at the theater and see what's happening." This is a true story. After 9/11, a local theater here had a thing that said, God bless our troops. And I had a friend who worked there. And my friend would be like, every day, some old person is like, can I have one ticket to God bless our troops? And I'd be like, it's not a movie, sir.
Yeah, this isn't the 1940s.
It's a sentiment. Like, I'll have two for God bless our troops, please.
I want to see Fred Astaire and God bless our troops.
That sounds good.
I like that. Like,
yeah. For real.
Give me a large popcorn and one ticket for God Bless Our Troops. Yeah.
Well, you know,
they should have just went along with it and been like, yeah, here. Give him a ticket to like Finding Nemo or some shit.
A ticket to
Fast and Furious 2,
Tokyo Drift.
Tokyo Drift.
Did you watch the Chippendale trailer?
Yes. I'm confused by it.
Yeah, I'm confused by it too. I'm confused by it, but I think I do know what they're doing.
What do you think they're doing?
Disney is going, oh, you guys have these IP shows like
DuckTales. And...
No, no. I mean like when I say IP shows, I mean like IP festivals. Like, oh, Space Jam was Warner Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
And Ready Player One was another. We're Disney. We got a bunch of shit. Although they kind of already did this with the second Wreck-It Ralph. There was tons of Disney IP in it. But it seems like, forget that, they're doing it. This is their Space Jam. Because it's the real world, Chip and Dale, but then like, there's in the trailer, you see them riding My Little Ponies.
Right.
You see Scrooge McDuck. You see Roger Rabbit. So it's kind of like a Disney version of Space Jam. But what's weird is Chip and Dale were characters that existed before the very specific reboot that was Rescue Rangers. So it's weird that this is called Rescue Rangers, even though it's like not really Rescue Rangers because it's like they were stars of a show called Rescue Rangers.
Right. It's weird to me. What weirded me out the most was seeing Roger Rabbit show up.
Yeah.
Because if you recall, it was such a big to-do to see in Roger Rabbit when that movie came out.
Yeah.
Both Disney and Warner Brothers characters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So to now see Roger Rabbit just like hobnobbing with Chippendale.
Yeah.
In a full-on Disney production.
Well, I mean, he is a Disney guy, but it's like...
I guess technically he is a Disney character.
Yeah. But it just... The weird thing is... The movie... And they sell this fact. This movie's brought to you by Lonely Island. And they're like, Lonely Island brought... And Chip and Dale are voiced by John Mulaney and Andy Samberg.
Which I guess good for John Mulaney. He's on the rebound now.
Yeah. It could be fun. I don't know who asks for these things.
I was literally just going to say, I don't know who this is for. That's really the big question.
Like, when I saw a trailer when I saw the trailer pop up, I was like, Rescue Rangers. I was like, okay, this is going to be a reboot show. And then the trailer begins very odd where it makes it like a behind the scenes of like 30 years later, where are the stars of Rescue Rangers? And one of them, as like a joke about plastic surgery, said he got the CG update. So one looks like a 2D animation.
Yeah, and then one of them's like a 3D... Or not 3D, but like live. Well, yeah, I guess like live action.
Yeah, which is weird. I mean, it's better than what they did with Space Jam, where they like for the final scene they turned 3D for some reason.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I don't know. I mean, I like Disney. I like Disney characters. I kind of like Lonely Island. I mean, I've liked a lot of their music. I guess it could be. You know, this movie,
gotta wait and see.
Yeah, and it's going straight to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
So no theatrical release, which could tell you something. Could tell you something. It flabbergasted me when I watched the trailer twice because
it came out of nowhere.
What did I just see?
Because it was like, what is this?
Right, and then you watch it and you're like, what is this?
Right, you're still kind of confused over what it is.
Yeah, it's odd. Well, the other trailer, did you see the trailer for Studio 66 or Studio 666, whatever the fuck it's called?
Oh, the Foo Fighters movie?
Yes. The Foo Fighters horror comedy movie?
Yeah, I don't like this.
I saw the trailer in a movie theater and I kept thinking, oh, this is going to be like an M&M's commercial. It was so stupid. Then I was like, oh, this is a parody. Like, this is going to turn into an M&M's commercial, or this is going to turn into a car commercial. When it kept going and then had a title, I was like, oh, shit, that's a real trailer for a real movie? It looks like a Funny or Die fake trailer.
Right, like Jeff Garland's in it. Like,
right. Well, he needs to work now.
Well, yeah, he...
he needs a job.
He dug himself a big bowl of trouble.
Yeah. It's basically, it looks like Evil Dead, but with the Foo Fighters playing themselves.
Yeah, I watched that trailer 3 times when I first saw it.
Yeah.
I saw it before you sent it to me.
Yeah.
And I tried figuring out, I really sat with it because I was like, what do I hate about this? Like, there's something just viscerally like turned me off.
It looks super glossy.
I think that's it. Is that like, this is too big a budget for too big a band.
Right.
This should be like some independent film
right
with like a cult rock band
Yeah.
That like has like some sort of bona fides behind them.
It feels
in
like
the horror world.
It feels like a crazy vanity project.
Yes.
Like I'm sure it's full of cameos too. Like everybody we could get into it.
Well, it goes back to this ethos of the Foo Fighters in general, which is I'm sure Dave Grohl's a great guy.
Yeah.
Seems like he just wants to have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna take that away from him, but I don't need to buy a Foo Fighters album.
They look so old now. And I'm not trying to be ageist, but in the trailer I kept being like, wow, some of the Foo Fighters are just old men.
Yeah.
Just very old men.
Yeah, well again.
And they can't act. None of them can act besides Dave Grohl. And even he can't act well.
Yeah, well again, that goes back to what I say about actors and musicians all the time. Like, we think of them of certain actors and musicians being who they were when we came up with them.
Yeah.
So, like, even if you think about Dave Grohl from 10 years ago, you think, oh, Dave Grohl, he's been around. I remember him, you know, 10 years ago.
Right.
Well, he's 10 years older now.
Right.
So it's like, you know, he may have been 43 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, now he's 53.
Right. By the way, the film came out. It came out the day we were recording this.
Oh, okay.
It's got 56% on Rotten Tomatoes, but this blows my mind. 84% audience score.
Well,
that's got to be a campaign.
I believe that because I'm sure it's just Foo Fighters fans.
Yeah.
Going to see it. It's like the Tenacious D movie.
Yeah, that was such a disappointment. After how good the HBO show was, I hated that movie.
Yeah, I know people who love that movie.
Really?
Yeah, like big Tenacious D fans. I remember going over someone's house in high school when that came out. I think like my senior year, or it might have been like my first year. I don't know when it came out.
Yeah.
Like, I remember being over someone's house and their parents weren't home, and they like had a big, basically a Tenacious D party. Like, they streamed it on a projector, like outside in the backyard.
Yeah.
And basically had like a pool party, and they got high and like were singing along to all the songs, and it's almost like a midnight, like they were doing a Rocky Horror thing.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, is this what this movie's destined to be? And then as the years have gone on, it's like, oh, no, it's just that one weird kid.
Yeah, it went nowhere.
Yeah.
No one even fucking thinks about it.
Yeah.
I just have to read this one audience review. This is half a star. I only want to support the band, but I have to say this movie was pathetic. I kind of feel like it was worse than Kiss Meets the Phantom.
That's the vibe I got, is that they were going for a Kiss Meets the Phantom kind of thing.
But, you know,
Kiss Meets the Phantom is, like, so low budget, and...
But, see, this is the thing, like, you have to play it straight for it to be funny. Like, you can't be wink, 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 wink. This is why horror comedies fail so often. Because they try to be too winky. It's like, no, like, you can make a horror comedy, but you gotta understand, like, you gotta play it straight. You gotta play it super straight.
Right.
And that's what will make it funny.
Exactly.
God damn. Now I would respect if the ghost of Kurt Cobain came out.
Oh my God.
And haunted him.
I often think about stuff like that. Like, if Nirvana had continued, they would have played a Super Bowl by now.
Oh yeah. But it's so interesting to see how much Dave Grohl was able to rebrand himself.
Yeah. Yeah. I
tried to make the fun uncle.
Oh yeah. I've tried to make the argument to people. And they don't want to hear it, but I've tried to make this argument to people that Dave Grohl is one of the luckiest men in rock music.
Okay.
Because he was part of something so huge in Nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think you can make the argument that Foo Fighters has had more of not a cultural impact.
Yeah.
But they've had something that Nirvana hasn't had.
Well, he
and granted, a lot of people's retort will rightfully be, well, he's been alive for 30 years.
Right.
So he can build a fan base, but like, nope, but it's this weird, like, not many people spin off from a legendary band
weird
and then can sell out stadiums.
Because Cobain died so young, it's like Grohl got in and out real fast with street cred. Like, he got this street cred forever, but didn't really have to, like, work on that cred for a long time. It was like,
right,
he's always got that cred for, like, you know, one small inch of his whole massive career.
Right.
And then everything else. But everything else still is like, yeah, but remember, it was in Nirvana. Like, it's so interesting. Like,
and he also gets equity. Like, he pops up in other things too. Like, so
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
I don't dislike
him. No,
it
I don't dislike him at all.
This just looks like he was like, I want to make a scary movie. And somebody was like, okay, here's some money, I guess.
Yeah.
Get Jeff Garland. Just hope Jeff Garland doesn't talk about his vagina and hug people.
My vagina.
Apparently that was the thing that he said a lot that
I believe
he would get complaints about. Oh, boy. You know what? Let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk more about Nirvana, actually. Yeah. Welcome back to PCMC. This is the chill sesh. This is we chill. I said we're talking about Nirvana. Actually, what I kind of want to talk about is related, which is I've been spending a lot of time in the 90s, and I think pop culture has been spending a lot of time in the 90s. I've been reading Chuck Klosterman's new book, The 90s.
Okay.
Which is excellent. Now, I'm not a fan of his only because I haven't. Like, everyone for years was like, you got to read his stuff. He's the best. So that kind of turned me off. This is really the first thing by him I've read. But I love it. He's like,
I love. Chuck Klosterman was big to me when I was in college. So right. I was definitely in that crowd of like, you got to fucking read Chuck Klosterman.
Right,
like,
right. That's the thing that probably turned me off.
Yeah.
But the 90s, and it's a long book too, but like, I'm savoring it. And, you know, there's a chapter on, and it's not a history book, but it's like, it's a meditation.
He's a good essayist. Like, he's good at picking a big topic and then being like, here are 12 essays related to that topic that are really going to tie my entire thesis together.
Right. He did, there's a chapter on Nirvana and how, like, they were so commercially successful, yet that was antithetical to the message they were giving. But he's also a critic. So he brings in critiques of things. He then talks about like this Honda commercial that came out around that time where like it's like a grungy guy being like, yeah, this car is like a rock and roll car. And it's it's so amazing to me that he like remembered that commercial and like brought it into this reading. You know, I love when critics do things like that, like aren't just like, you know, reviewers, where they're like, I want to read things through each other. And, you know, he's got a chapter on Ross Perot's run for president.
Yeah.
And he compares a little bit to Trump, but he also is, every chapter is kind of like this. It's like, here's this topic. Here's more than you knew about it. So what you thought you knew about it was wrong. Here's what everyone says about it, but here's actually what was actually happening. So there's always like different
and
layers.
And he's very breezy. Like, he doesn't...
Yes.
He doesn't dumb anything down, but he's not, like, trying to talk over you.
He's like a more funny Malcolm Gladwell. It's that kind of writing.
Yeah, but, like, he's always been Chuck Klosterman. Like, he's always had that, like, pop culture lens to him.
Well, I'm going to probably go and read everything else he's done after this.
You should start with the one that got me into him and was sort of the big book that everyone got into him with. Just Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs.
Right. That what is that book?
That's basically what I just described for it. It's basically a bunch of his essays.
So there's no unifying theme?
Not really. There are some themes that he hits. And one of the big things he hits is, and you probably noticed it in the 90s book as well, from what it seems, is that he will get critical about pop culture, but then he will spin it right back to the idea that, yeah, we're going to be critical of this, but realize that everything's bullshit. Like, not that everything's bullshit, but that, like, the idea of, like, Nirvana, for example, of, oh, this is, we're making a statement, even though, like, we're now the commercial thing that we weren't supposed to be.
He'll give you these numbers, like, look how successful they were. Like, what they were saying and what they really were two different things.
Right, but then he'll bring it back to, like, but what you personally like shouldn't be bothered by that.
Yes.
Like, he has a whole essay. I think it's in Sex, Drugs, and Go-Go Puffs. It might be in one of his other ones, because I read like a bunch of his books at the same time, where he talks about Weezer at that time. And how they had these first two albums that were like seminal, like amazing albums, like once in a lifetime home runs. And then they disbanded for a couple of years, took a hiatus, came back in like 1999, 2000, released the Green Album, and from that point on, we're just like making really sharp poppy songs, but that didn't really mean anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a lot of fans are like went along with that, and then a lot of fans like split themselves up and are like, "Oh, I'm an old school Weezer fan."
Right.
Like I like 90s Weezer.
Right, right, right.
And it's like you shouldn't have to like just because something's not the same thing.
Right.
Doesn't mean you have to hate it. Like it's just a different thing. Like you're getting a different thing out of it.
Right, right.
Like this music that they're making now may be very more easily digestible, doesn't have like sharp lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
But like if it's just a fun poppy song, what's wrong with that?
Right, right. No, I really love his perspective because it's sharp and interrogative, but without like shitting on things.
No, that's what I mean. Like he will be critical, but then he will always take the high road on low culture is a good way someone puts
yes,
me.
Yes,
where,
yes.
Where like he will not poo-poo something just because it's either mainstream or because it's not mainstream.
Yeah.
He's just going to be like, look, this is a good song.
Yeah.
Or like, this is a good book or a good movie.
Yeah. I'm 100 pages into it, and I love it. I would absolutely suggest it to you.
I think I may need to pick it up.
Yeah.
I haven't read a Klosterman book in a while.
It's so good. But the other 90s stuff that's been, like, spinning around is I've been watching the Hulu series Pam and Tommy, which is about the Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee sex tape and how it got out and the crazy story behind it. It's a little bit like the Ryan Murphy,
O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, it's a little bit like
it's one of those kind of
true videos. Crime like kind of things, but it's more funny. Like there's a scene where his penis is actually talking, and it's of course voiced by Jason Mantzoukas.
Oh wow!
It's shit you didn't know. Like it paints Tommy in a really bad light, and it paints the guy who stole the tape in a really bad light, but it paints Pam in a really positive light that really makes you feel bad for her. Because, like, she had a moment where, like, she could have turned and then this happened. And,
right.
It, like they show her in the show is, like, I don't want to be a sex symbol anymore. I just want to act. You know, I'm so sick of, like, Baywatch. Like, they show a scene where they're on the set of Baywatch and, like, there's literally some grip who, like, is touching her, like, butt. Like, how much of a wedgie should she have with the onesie?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's too much cheek. We're going to get, the censor's going to go crazy. Like, that's the shit they're concerned about. And then she's like, I want to, you know, she thinks barbed wire is going to be a big movie. She's like, oh, barbed wire.
Right.
Which we all know wasn't. But then this happens. And what's really funny is how much both them and the culture don't understand the internet. Because, like, they're in the first couple episodes, Tommy's like, we'll just get all the copies. Don't worry. It's not going to get up. What's the internet? And it's just like mind-blowing.
Right now, you're just like, oh, God.
Like, it's over. Like, it was over the second. Although it wasn't put on the internet as a video. It was sold on VHS through the internet.
Right. Like, there was this, I mean, that could be a whole episode in and of itself. Like, there was this very small window where you weren't putting stuff online to watch it. You were putting it online to sell on a VHS tape.
Yeah, and that's what it was. But then immediately people start pirating it, so the guy who thought he was gonna get rich off of it doesn't.
And that was also the first tape where it was like, oh, her career is over. And then you wait a couple of years and it's like, nah, her career is not over.
No,
and now like sex tapes and leaks come and go. Like,
now it's
sometimes you don't even hear about them anymore.
Right.
Like sometimes like someone's like dick pic will leak. And unless, like, you were looking for it, you might not even hear about
it. Well, there was the Fappening one in, like, 2013, 2014, which was just a giant hack into the cloud system where you got, like, dozens of celebrities and so many. So it's almost like,
it's almost like if everyone's naked, no one is.
Right. I mean, it's all crime. It's all terrible. But I guess it's such a different culture now. It's just, that's a good show. I've been also listening to the podcast documentary Downloaded, The Rise and Fall of Harry Knowles and Ain't It Cool News. And they're only on 4 episodes so far, but it's like really well produced. It's like really got that documentary feel. And boy, was Harry Knowles a scumbag. Like, I did not realize, even before the sexual assault, all the Me Too shit that happened, he was just a piece of shit. Like, he was just not a good guy. But I admired him so much when I was younger. Right. And I have to say, like, something like this podcast, PCMC, was very influenced by that kind of culture. But the thing that I'm getting the most out of it is learning about the other writers, learning about who Moriarty was and who Quint was, and like all these other people. Like, Moriarty is a writer now who like writes, like Drew McSweeney.
Oh, Drew McSweeney.
Yeah, yeah. That's Moriarty.
Oh, yeah. No, I've interviewed him. He's great.
Yeah. Like, and then Quint, who I used to love his reviews, Quint was like a wunderkind. He was like 15, like when he was writing for the site. So like learning about all these other people is to me cooler. And then, like, it'll come back to Harry Knowles being a scumbag.
Does Harry Knowles still run Ain't It Cool News? Because, like, every once in a blue, like, once a year, I'll go on Ain't It Cool News, and it seems like it's still active, but it's just him.
I went recently just because I was listening to this podcast, and I was like, let's see if it really is still stuck in time. Has it not?
Oh, well, that was the thing for a long time. Like, it's just frozen in amber like that. It still looks like it's 1998.
Yeah. It's still got the same. Okay. All right. I'm on it now. I'm trying to look for anything that says something new. Damn. It's just what?
It's kind of a ghost town.
I know. Like, what? Oh, I see something that says She-Hulk and Cobra Kai. So I guess it's still around. But, you know, but it was like once so influential.
It's funny that you say it was so influential because, like, if you go back, there are examples that people have posted of Harry Knowles reviews that, like, if you saw those, if you read those reviews now,
yeah,
you'd be like, who the fuck wrote this?
Right, right.
Like, this is garbage. Like, their whole
reviews were... He was not a good writer.
No, he was, I would say, inarguably the worst writer on that site.
Yeah.
Because, like, he would do these reviews and... A lot of times, like, a big thing, and this has always been a big thing, so, like, I noticed this even when I was in high school reading the site, where he would never get to the point.
Yes.
He would never get to the point, and he would be reviewing, like, a horror movie.
Yeah.
And he would be like, well, you know, there's no tits in the first half hour. Yeah. So, like, you know, it's not that great. And it's like, but what about the scares, Harry?
Right.
Like, what are we,
right. Right.
What are we doing
it
here?
It was so misogynistic. He was so misogynistic.
Or he would just have weird stances that he would die. Like, what was the Batman review where it was like, this is not like the comic I read?
Well, they talk about this on the podcast. One of the big, like, the first time that Hollywood really noticed and tried to fight back against him was Batman and Robin.
Okay.
And, like, Joel Schumacher actually, like, talked about him in the public.
Oh, I'm talking about a different thing. Like, this was sort of, like, maybe the last... big thing he was known for before Me Too.
Oh, really?
Where he, I think it might have been the third Nolan Batman film.
Oh, really?
Remember he did this review where he was like, oh, this movie is not at all like the comic book storyline with
Bane. Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, therefore, like, I gotta give this movie an F.
Yeah. Yeah, he would have such weird tastes on things. But, you know, the thing that I liked about the site, and even his reviews, I did like his reviews when I was young, was like, you know, when you're used to like newspaper reviews, the idea of like, I'm going to write about a movie and I'm going to write about movie culture and right. I'm going to write about fandom and I'm going to put myself into it. That was so influential. I mean, love the website, hate the website. The world we live in now, I think, was in some way shaped by Ain't It Cool. The podcast culture we have, the fan culture we have, the superhero movies, the Star Wars movie. I really feel like he was, and that site maybe, was a big part of what we have now.
Oh, yeah. And it's just interesting to think of him at the head of it. Because
yeah.
And how big the site got at one point. Like, didn't he have his own series on Nerdist?
Yes. One of the early scandals was he was invited to a screening of Godzilla 95 and they brought him and his dad out and they went to go to Disney World and they gave him a beautiful hotel. And then he writes a glowing review. And then rightly, everyone in the message board was like, so they bought your review. Yeah. You have literally no ethics. And then he like wrote another review. Sometimes he'd get into wars too, which was...
Yeah.
Tacky. He wrote another review where he was like, I understand what you're all saying, but I've looked at it again and it's still basically good. And like, he just doubled down on it.
Yeah, he would do that a lot where people would call him out because yeah. he would have very clear friends in Hollywood that were feeding him stuff.
Well, you know,
not the least of which Tarantino, it seemed.
Well, I found out from this that John Favreau was a big spy for him. A lot of leaks and shit came from John Favreau.
I've heard this. Like the early Marvel.
Yeah. And the Fellowship of the Ring, like when New Line was like constantly like giving grief to Peter Jackson. Peter Jackson would send rumors and shit to Harry Knowles. Mm. And then Peter Jackson would like come on set and be like, everyone come here. Listen, these leaks are terrible. We have to stop this. Seriously. But then he was the one who was leaking shit. Because remember at the beginning, they were like, no, it's going to be two movies. No, you can do it in two. And then he wanted three. And then they were into, no, you'd make this guy that. And then so through Harry Knowles, like, taking that information and fighting, that was the big thing. And the other big sin that really made was ethically shaky, and also it made Hollywood go against them.
Yeah,
was they would get spy reviews from test screenings, and yes, the studios were like, "These are test screenings. These are not the finished films. This is wrong. You signed an NDA. You shouldn't do this." And he would publish them. And, you know, some people were like, this guy's a hero. We're sticking it to the studio. This is for directors. And then,
meanwhile, it's like you're kind of fucking over the director.
Right, right, right. But some directors, like, you know, some people were on board with him. It was such a wild time because I forgot how much influence it really did have once upon a time.
Yeah.
And then
it went from Ain't Cool News to Latino Review.
Yeah.
In a weird, which sounds, if you have no idea what we're talking about, that sounds insane.
Yeah, I know. But speaking of leaks, Latino Review was big on script leaks. They would do script reviews. Remember that?
Yeah. Just for whatever reason, they just had a reporter.
They had somebody who got them scripts, basically.
And it was just like a running, almost like a running joke. Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, you see, like, Latino Review's got the scoop.
It's so sobering listening to this podcast, though, because even though he is a creep, I thought back about this time with such rose-tinted glasses. And now hearing some of the reviews again and hearing some of the events again, it's like, wow, this was such a boys club. This was such a dick measuring contest. Like, this was so like that Kevin Smith, Harry Knowles, I'm a nerd gatekeeper shit.
Yeah.
It's not like what it is now. It's not, or like what it is for me now. It's not like about like, oh, we love this shit. It would be about love, but then it would turn it quickly into, I love it and you don't fucking get it, so fuck you and you don't understand and get out of here.
Right. Especially when you would start getting the fringe superhero movies that would come out, like the Hellboys of the
world. Yes.
They would champion them.
Yes.
But then they would also be like, oh, well, if you don't get this, then you're just fucking out of the loop. You don't, like, we don't want you a part of this nerd culture.
Yeah, it was, and there were very few women who wrote for the site. It was really not a great space for women.
No.
It wasn't. So that's a 90s thing. And then I guess the other 90s thing that I might do a whole episode on this, but I've been really into the Kyle Mooney Netflix show, Saturday Morning All-Star Hits, Smash.
It looks like it just devolves into a fever dream.
You have to watch it. Here's how I'll describe it. Imagine the pastiche of like early Adult Swim.
Okay.
But without the edgelordiness.
Okay.
Again, it's not dicky. It's like, it's almost like a celebration of it. And it's like, it's very 90s because it's like, you've got like these wraparound live action things where it's like, whoa, welcome to Saturday Morning All-Star Hits. You got another episode of Strong-a-mos coming up and like making fun of that shit. And then it'd be like these cartoon parodies that really look like those cartoons. There's like, I think, 8 episodes or whatever. I love it.
The vibe I got from it is almost like a TV Funhouse.
Yes. Yes. It's really good. So I don't know. I've just been swimming around in the 90s lately. Okay. What have you been reading and watching and shit?
I actually have a trailer that I forgot to send you.
Oh, yeah.
That I would have wanted to go over.
Maybe I've seen it.
Maybe you've seen it. It's a documentary. It's going to be on Amazon Prime next week.
Uh-huh.
Called Lucy and Desi.
Yes, I saw the trailer. It's the Amy Poehler movie.
Amy Poehler directed it.
Yeah, that looks good.
It looks a hell of a lot better than whatever that fucking movie was they did.
Oh, the Sorkin one.
The Sorkin
one. I like that. I liked it. But it's Sorkin, so you know none of it's true.
It's Sorkin, and it made me feel like I just wanted a documentary. And I was like, oh, okay, here it is.
Here's the documentary. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and like the idea that like her daughter has all these tapes of them.
Yeah. So you have like their voice In the documentary, yeah. Yeah, that looks very cool. That looks very cool. I did like the Sorkin thing, but just because it was just like, you know, it was like, it was Sorkin. It was like overly wrought and, you know, but it was, but I am excited about this documentary.
Yeah, Sorkin hasn't, I feel like he hasn't been good in a long time.
Well, I haven't seen this, but my brother says that the Sorkin stage version of To Kill a Mockingbird is excellent. And okay. I could see that. I could see him being better in theater than he is.
Yeah.
You know, I never was a big fan of, I never really watched West Wing. I never
like Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
I saw the movie Molly's Game, which he wrote. That was kind of interesting. Okay. But I've always found him to be overwrought. I watched the first season of The Newsroom. Yeah.
Which was overwrought.
Right. Right. But, I'm excited about that.
Yeah. He's, I just could never get into Sorkin. Like, it's just very...
He's an acquired taste, for sure.
He's an acquired taste. I feel like he always makes things, no matter how serious they are. Like, if something is at an 8 out of 10 in seriousness, and he rises to that challenge, like, it could be good.
Yeah.
But if he's tackling something that should be a 2 out of 10, he'll ramp it up to 8 out of 10. Like, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip is a perfect example. Because that was a show that was ostensibly about, like, a fake version of SNL.
Right.
And, like, the behind-the-scenes bullshit. But he made it so serious. He made it as serious as The West Wing.
Like, I never watched any of it.
There's, like, a whole episode where they're worrying about, like, doing a joke about Muhammad. Or, like, you know, putting, like, some terrorist leader in a joke.
Okay.
And then they get, like, bomb threats from, like, terrorist groups. And, like, the writers are afraid to, like, come into work and, like, it's, like, super serious. And it's, like, what am I watching?
Yeah, that's
like,
crazy.
What is this, like, behind the scenes? This is not behind the scenes of SNL.
No,
like,
right.
But in terms of what I've been watching a hidden gem of a YouTube channel.
What?
That, it's not even a hidden gem, but it just recently started popping up. The David Letterman people.
Yes!
Have now started uploading old Letterman clips.
It's the best thing that's happened all month. It's incredible. Today I watched Dave bothers people at a McDonald's, and he just keeps going around in ordering shit through the drive-in and like talking to the girl. It's just, oh, his remotes were so good.
And just like the fact that they're finally uploading all this stuff.
All of it. The old show and the new show.
Old show, new show. Honestly, I wish they would just start uploading full episodes.
And interviews with writers from the time. Like, it's really like official.
Yeah, like they're doing what the Team Coco team has been doing for a while, which is like something big's in the news.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Tom Brady won the Super Bowl this weekend. Oh, let's bust out that interview of Tom Brady at Conan did 15 years ago.
Right.
Like, and I've been watching old Conan clips too.
Yeah.
After I watched the Letterman clips. And this is only going to be, like, the nerdiest trivia for, like, real Conan fans, but whatever. Did you know that there was a version of Conan's set that only lasted for 4 episodes?
No. What did it look like?
They debuted a new set right before 9/11.
Oh.
That had the Twin Towers in the background.
Oh.
And it was basically the same set that he had after that with, like, the wrinkled curtain and stuff.
Yeah.
But it wasn't wrinkled, and it was, like, purple in the background. So it was only like slightly different, but it was just interesting because I was watching his clip and I'm just like, when was this? I don't remember him with this set. And the date on it was like September like 4th or whatever.
Oh, shit.
One. And he's like, yeah, we got this new set now. Like, had the same set for 4 years and finally got a new one. And it lasted 4 episodes.
Wow. That's interesting.
And then that led to me watching Conan's like first episode back from 9/11.
Yeah.
That was interesting. He had Steve Croft on to try and make sense of things.
Steve Croft, who's that?
From 60 Minutes.
Oh, okay.
And then he had Sarah Vowell.
Yeah.
Who was always a guest on his show.
She was always good.
She was always good, also in The Incredibles.
I think she got The Incredibles from being a guest on his show.
I would
They were like,
so.
Her voice is so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
That's and that reminded me of just like, there were people who would be guests on these shows that would become like almost synonymous with being a guest on these shows.
Yes.
And I was like, Sarah Vowell, like, yeah, she's one of them.
Yeah.
Like her, Marc Maron, like there were just these like New York people that he would call up when someone else would like cancel.
Yeah.
Like Al Roker would always like pop down.
Yeah. I watched yesterday on the Letterman channel, Pee-wee on Letterman.
Ooh.
And he was a little different from how we remember him. His voice was very high, and he was acting more like a little kid. And I was like, oh, right, that's what the character was. It was a little kid.
Oh, so this is a clip from, like, early Letterman.
This is early Letterman.
Okay.
But, like, they do, but then they go and he's like, I want to do a bit with you. And, like, they do the bit that Conan ended up doing where they drive with the green screen behind them. And it was super, he had, like, there was a lot of props.
Yeah.
And this must have been before the movie because he's like, he did the tape bit. Where he puts a tape on his face. It was just one weird bit after one weird bit. And you got, like, Pee-wee's masterful because whenever something would die, he would save it with, like, a weird Pee-wee-ism. Mm. Like, it's really good. And it's like, you forget also, like, some people now, like, Letterman's become so, you know, like an old grandfather. I think people allow, like, what made Letterman good? He was funny. And it's like, well, you don't understand, like,
there wasn't his anything attitude, like him.
Right. His attitude was what was funny.
Right. And it's that same attitude that TikTokers are trying to cancel him, even though he doesn't have a show anymore.
Right.
Like,
what
are you canceling?
Right, right. And what else did I see? Oh, a funny bit. What's funny about this is how bad it goes. It from start to finish, the whole thing doesn't work.
Oh, well, when a bit doesn't work, and especially like early Letterman, I love that he you could see the frustration just like boiling over.
Yeah.
He wants to be anywhere else but there.
You gotta look this up. This is Steve Martin is showing off his antique vase collection. So it's
I saw this clip.
Yeah, and it's
and the vases keep breaking or something.
Right, which is supposed to be the bit, but like everything that's supposed to make them break isn't working. At one point a bunch of sheep go through, but nothing happens. Like and then like they break and then Steve Martin's like, well, there's a very polite sheep. Yeah, they stayed far away from the I'm glad they stayed away from these sensitive vases. And then like eventually just start like breaking them on their own, like for no reason. Like just the bit goes completely downhill. But they also like you can tell they've devoted a whole segment to it, so they can't
bail. So now
bail.
They can't. Right.
So they just have to keep going. Oh, damn! It wasn't live, but it had that feeling. Especially because, you know, it was late at night and no one gave a shit.
And just the idea a lot of times of like, oh, they gave us precious airtime and we're going to waste it.
Right, right, right. You know, and, you know, a comedian like Steve Martin or Bill Murray would come on and be like, I have an idea for a bit. Let me come on. Like all the stupid shit, like later, like, what was it? In the later show, Bill Murray would come out as Liberace. Like, why? Like, just stupid shit like that.
These sheep are just walking right through and not doing anything.
Yeah.
Pee-wee Herman and Dave. Dave waits at home for the cable guy.
It's all good. It's all good. He really invented that remote thing, though. And when you watch his remotes, you're like, these are like TikToks. These are like YouTube videos. Like, so much of, I think, what we have now came from, I think, Letterman, really.
Yeah, like, a lot. Because the way these are broken up, it's just like, these would just be YouTube videos now.
Yeah, yeah.
These would be like, oh, here's your YouTube video for the week.
Yeah. It made me think about how much I hate James Corden because his so-called remote where they're in car karaoke,
there's no joke to it.
And there's also there's nothing at stake. There's nothing real about it. It's so staged. It's so controlled.
But it's just like there's nothing to I hate it because there's nothing to it. Like,
right, yeah.
What's the joke? Oh, well, there is no joke. So you're just in a car doing karaoke.
Right.
Yeah, but with a famous person, it's like, yeah, but you're just doing karaoke. Like,
right.
Yeah. It's like,
right.
So why do I what am I missing here?
Yeah, right. Nothing. You're not missing anything.
At least with the lip sync battles, like,
there was
my
something.
Understanding is like there's like they get creative with it.
Yeah.
Like, but like now you're just limiting yourself. You're literally just limiting yourself to like, we're in this car together.
Right. It ends up just being like,
it feels like a waste of the celebrity's time too. Like,
yeah.
Like, okay, you got Stevie Wonder. We're just going to sit in this car and sing his music back to him.
It's like you get a little bit of an interview and a little bit of a storyteller thing, but it also just feels like an ad for their music. And also like whoever it is, like James Corden, like, oversells how much he loves it. Like, oh, this is the best. This is so moving. And it's like, all right.
Well, that's his whole shtick, and I don't like it. Like, he was, and again, I'm not a fan of Friends, but when HBO ran those commercials for the Friends reunion, they must not have wanted people to know that this was something that they were just being flim-flammed on.
Right.
Because they sold this thing like it was a Friends reunion episode.
Right.
But then the more they showed of it, and it was basically a round table hosted by James Corden.
Right.
And there's a scene that really, like, gives me douche chills every time I see it, where James Corden, while soft music is playing, goes, "It's like you really were our friends."
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that's the James Corden shtick right there.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Like, one of my favorite James Corden bits, and it's not a bit, it's drunk Patrick Stewart making fun of him, going, "You have a big belly."
Oh, yeah, when they're at like an awards ceremony.
And he's drunk, and Patrick Stewart, he didn't even do anything wrong, but Patrick Stewart thought he did something wrong. So he's like, they're just getting mean with each other. It's fun.
Belly.
It just makes me want to watch that clip of Patrick Stewart on Extras.
Which one was that?
Where he's talking to Ricky Gervais, and he's like, "Oh, you know, I have an idea for a script. You know, it's like an action movie. You know, I get in a helicopter, and then, you know, there's two bustly ladies there." Like, every idea he has, like, he works in, like, this,
yeah.
They're just, like, big, busty, naked ladies.
Yeah. Ah, he's so good.
He's great at just, like, he should do more comedy. I mean, I guess he does.
Yeah.
Do comedy every once in a while. He was the poop emoji.
Yes, you bet he was. Well, that's the thing. Like, he also narrated the movie Ted. Like, he lends out his credibility for comedy a lot.
Yes. But one of my favorite things he ever did was on set. There's like an early 90s episode of Saturday Night Live where he's running an erotic bakery.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's like, "Sexy cakes," but like in that voice.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. All right, let's take a break and we'll come back with our current obsessions. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Vin Forte. Ooh. Vin, we're going to talk about our current obsessions. What are you currently obsessed with?
Obsessions. Oh, man. What am I? My current obsession is playing a little game called Power Wash Simulator.
What is this? I'm so intrigued.
It's on Steam, and I think it's on PS4 and stuff as well, but it's exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
Your missions include, like, one level will be, okay, you got to power wash this person's backyard.
Yeah.
And there's just, like, dirt over everything, and you got a big power wash gun.
Oh, that sounds so satisfying.
And you just, like, you go and you power wash things. You can get upgraded guns that have, like,
More
tools and higher, like, you could clean more of them.
Wow.
And you can go to all the, like, it starts out with, like, okay, you can clean a backyard, all the way up to, like, weirder stuff. Like, you clean a house that's shaped like a shoe, like a big shoe house. You clean the Mars rover.
Okay.
Power wash the Mars rover.
But it's satisfying, right? Like, is that the idea?
The most satisfying game.
Wow.
It is. You could waste hours just power washing
that
everything.
Sounds amazing.
Because there's really no way to lose. It's just, like, you know, you do it at your own time, like, leisurely pace.
Wow.
Like, there are some levels that will take you hours, so it's like, you know, like, I was stuck on this level where it's basically like a big treehouse.
Okay.
But like a huge, like, sprawling, like, you're climbing upstairs and there's different buildings and stuff. And, like, that takes a lot of you have to clean the firehouse.
Okay.
Then there's, like, a whole tower section that you have to, like, get on a ladder and spray things down in certain areas.
No, I never use Steam. Do I need a PC? I know I sound like an old man. Like, how do I play these Steam games?
You just create an account on Steam.
Can I do it with a MacBook?
Oh, yeah.
Just so any personal computer I can use.
So any personal computer.
Okay.
And then, yeah, you just load up Steam. You buy the game. You know, you put it on your computer.
Okay. Okay.
You leave Steam open or you know on when you want to connect to leaderboards and stuff. Mm-hmm. But really, like it's just so satisfying.
Wow, that sounds really satisfying.
Like even just like watching a playthrough of it.
Yeah, I bet. Was, like, I bet.
So satisfying.
Well, I find real videos of power washing satisfying.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, my obsession is also kind of satisfying, although it's kind of gross. Some people will find it gross, but I find it so satisfying. I'm talking about hoof videos. You ever watch hoof videos?
Hoof video. Is this where they... Oh, I may be completely off, but is this where they go to horses who have their hooves outgrown?
Mm-hmm.
And they like basically like cut them down to size?
That's part of it. That's part of the genre.
Because I've seen a lot of these on TikTok now.
Yeah.
Where it's like that and the lamb shearing videos.
Yeah. The good hoof videos are the cow ones.
Okay.
And there are three basic channels that do these. There's Nate the Hoof Guy. He's the best one.
Okay.
There's Tech TV, which I don't know why it's called Tech TV. It's just hoof videos.
Yeah.
And then there's the Hoof GP, where some of his videos are good, but some of them are just like, there's too much betting music, and it's just like, what are you doing? But so these guys, their job is they go to farms, and they have these machines where you put the cow in. It just, you know, it's not a machine. It holds the cow up, and then they take the cow's leg and they pull the leg up so you can see it. And when a cow is lame, that means it's not walking on one of its legs, and it could have something stuck in its hoof. It could have bruised its hoof, and now there's a lesion under the hoof. So a hoof, right, is basically like your fingernails, but it's thick.
Right.
Sometimes they refer to it as horn, but it's basically it's not alive, but it grows.
But I can see how it's satisfying, because if you watch these videos, it's almost like they're cutting like a block of wood.
Right. They pull up the hoof and it's all dirty. It's whatever, and they take out the main tool. They have two main tools. One is this very very sharp knife that they use to like carve at it, and that's always satisfying. Because you see it get white and you see them shape it and it's beautiful. And then they also use like basically like a power sander to like flatten it out. But here's where it gets gross. The real interesting videos are the ones where like they've got a lesion and like you've got to find the lesion and then like cut around it and then like put salicylic acid in so it's okay. Like I just watched a great one where this cow was really lame and like he was cutting the hoof and then he finds a little hole and like some pus comes out and he was like, oh, that probably feels great. And then he keeps going and he thought it was done. He cuts more and the pressure, this pink bloody pus,
oh God,
shoots out with such pressure, but it also is satisfying because you know that must feel amazing to the cow.
Oh, yeah.
Because the cow is in so much pain and he just relieved the cow's pain. And they always end the videos by showing the cow walking again. It's like, look how much better the cow's walking.
Right.
And it's so gross, but it's so satisfying. And they you know, and what they always do the same thing, which is, you know, there's the two toes. Usually it's just a problem on one toe. So you want to keep that toe elevated so it's not on the ground. So they put a block, they glue a block to the other toe. So it's always like, we got to glue the block here, and then this is the one we clean up. Guys, you got to watch hoof videos. It is so hypnotic. It is so relaxing.
I get it, because, again, I've been watching on Instagram these lamb shearing videos.
Yeah.
Like, some of these lambs, like, don't get sheared for, like, a whole year.
And you just think, God, that must feel good for the lamb. That lamb must feel great.
Because, like, it's, like, the heaviest blanket in the world.
Yeah.
On them, and then when they shear them, like, again, like you were saying with all the, when they cut it off, it's like all white and beautiful. Like,
yeah,
when they shear the sheep, it's like a lot of times this dark, dirty fur, and they shear it down, and there's like, oh, this beautiful skin underneath,
and you can tell they feel refreshed, they feel happy. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah, it's, you know, there's something like a watching somebody with a skill do their skill, but it's also, in this case, it's helping an animal. That can't,
right.
Like, an animal can't do this themselves.
No.
A cow's fucked, basically.
Yeah.
If a cow hurts their hoof,
That's it.
Somebody has to come and fix it for them, or that's it. It goes away on its own, which will be painful, or it doesn't, and they just go lame, and you have to kill them, or whatever. It's so goddamn relaxing. I love it. Hoof videos.
Go to your local Instagram and look up hoof videos. Yeah.
Go look up Nate the Hoof Guy on YouTube. He's the best. Nate's the best. And I've watched so many of them now that, like, I so prefer Nate. I'll watch, like, Tech TV.
Like, you have preferences?
Yeah, I'll watch Tech TV, and I'll see the guy doing, like, the carving, and I'll be like, oh, he's doing a hack job. Come on.
Look, Nate would have done this.
Yeah, Nate would have fucking done this so much smoother than you. You're hacking away. What the fuck are you doing? That's not a sharpener. You got to sharpen your tools. Come on, guy. You're not going to put salicylic acid on this? Come on. He's going to get digital dermatitis. He's going to get reinfected.
Come on.
Yeah, don't tell me this. Oh, this farm is clean. They don't have digital dermatitis. Come on. What does it harm you? Put the salicylic acid, wrap it up. God damn it. And they're always very, very careful to never disparage the farm or the farmer.
No, you can't.
You know, no one, like, the unspoken thing is how miserable the lives of these animals are.
Right.
Like these cows that are fucking constantly pregnant so they could give milk. Yeah.
Or at least they have good hooves.
Absolutely. You know, lately I've been thinking maybe this is what I want to do with my life. Like, you know, like
become a hoofer.
Yeah. Retire from what I'm doing and just go, just learn the trade of being a hoofsman. And you just every day you go to different farms and you fix the hooves. Sounds beautiful. Yeah, sounds like a beautiful life.
Then you could finally get on Farmers Only.
What is that like? What's that like? Grinder for Farmers?
It's have you never seen commercials for Farmers?
No,
Only?
No.
Okay. They're the weirdest commercials, but yeah, it's like a dating site.
Okay.
For farmers and like farm type people.
Farm type people.
They make a point. They're like,
you don't have to own land to be here.
Yeah, like you just have to have like farmer values, they say.
Is it like a hookup site or is it like love? You're looking for
love.
No,
it's love. Okay. Their whole tag, they have a whole jingle. It's like you don't have to be lonely.
Oh, that's sad.
Farmersonly.com.
That song made me sad.
But like, let me see if I can get a good, because these ads are like kind of ridiculous.
Where do you see these ads?
Oh, this is just like, I've seen them just on the internet before, like just people making fun of them. But they have like a whole slew of them where it's like there's someone fishing, shows you like someone who actually found someone there. Someone who's looking for a mate to go mudding with? What the fuck is mudding? What is it?
The ideology here is very weird. It's like a dating site for people who listen to country music.
Kinda.
That's very weird.
City folk need not apply.
Holy shit. Well, Vin, we've learned a lot today.
Yeah.
We've learned a hell of a lot. I gotta go sign up for Farmers Only.
Imagine she catches you like,
yeah.
Why are you on Farmers Only?
What? What? You're not a
baby,
city.
Baby, you're city folk. You don't get it.
Or like you pretend to be a farmer, but you're city folk, and they know. you got a backpack on, and then like a book falls out of it, and they're like, "Oh, what are you, city folk?" It's like, no, baby, I just use it.
No, I just use it to prop up my cow's hooves.
Yeah, yeah.
When
I'm
I
a
go
hoover.
Hoofing. Yeah,
I'm a hoover. I prefer Nate.
Yeah, no, I don't know where you found that Studs Terkel book, but yeah.
This is PCMC. I'm Mike Maggiorno. I'm joined by Vin Forte. Vin, you can find him on Oddballs. Oddballs was a fun podcast about. Is there any? Do you do every sport? What do you do? It's mostly basketball, right?
It's a mix. It's basketball heavy.
Yeah,
but it's mostly people like it because it's more of like someone described it as weekly audio essays.
Oh, fun.
And I like that. I like that description a lot because there's usually like a big topic.
Yeah.
That I'll get into that'll be like a 20-minute thing.
Yeah.
And then like I'll cover a couple of smaller topics and then get into like a food item of the week.
That's awesome. You could also find Vin, of course, on Emilio Sparks Presents
WrestleRap.
WrestleRap. This is PCMC. We end our episode by saying
go bye-bye.